lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
And good evening and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, episode number 188. The show with songwriters talking to other songwriters all about the craft of songwriting. Brand new songwriters, established professionals, anything in between. Together, we will share tips, we will share techniques, and we will share cool things found. Hopefully together, we will all learn maybe five or six new things each and every show about how to get a bit better at writing.
Come on now, it's Blair Packham tonight, at least.
Well, it's true, it's a special show.
Probably seven things.
Don't forget, you can always find us here live every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on CJRU, 1280 a.m. here in Toronto, or on the live stream at songtalk.ca if you can't get to a radio. You go to our website, and there's this nice little sort of box on the top right.
Oh, is there like a button?
Yes.
Okay.
And you can actually play the stream right from our website. It's just a fantastic.
Throw your headphones on and have a ball.
Yes, tonight I'll be your host. My name is Phil Henry, and joining me tonight, as always, are the very dedicated members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. Action figures soon to come.
Mm.
Across from me, Mr. Bruce Herrett.
Yes, present.
On the board tonight, Mr. Neil Modi.
Hey, what's happening?
And of course, heading our social media onslaught, Vanessa Vreeland.
Hello!
Hello.
Hey,
during
is.
The show, please join in the conversation. Send in your comments, questions, and gumbo recipes to Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we'll share them with the audience in real time, or send us an email at songtalk or at feedback at songtalk.ca, and we'll share them with the audience. And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca and find out how you can be a guest on our show. And tonight is actually kind of a special show for us because we're trying something a bit new.
It's different, isn't it?
It is. It is a bit different. So if everyone's a bit nervous, it's okay.
Not me.
No, I'm not nervous.
We have...
I love different.
One of our favorite songwriters in Toronto and one of our co-hosts and all-around great guy, Mr. Blair Packham.
Hey, Blair Packham.
Yay!
He's in the house.
Thank you. Hello.
House.
He is.
Yes.
Right. And, of course, Blair has just put out his latest album called Unpopular Pop.
Which is a fantastic album,
it
by
is
the way.
Really
thank
good.
You,
I
love
it. Actually,
thank
you. Heather
thanks,
wanted
Phil.
Me to tell you it's a fantastic album.
Oh, fantastic.
And she listens to it all the time.
Yeah.
And
I actually forgot to bring my copy tonight because I wanted you to sign it.
Oh, well, I'd be happy to do that.
Yes.
I'll meet you some other
it.
Time.
Okay, cool.
He'll sign your back.
Yeah.
Like, he likes chewing that.
Yeah, sign my arm.
It's
my cast.
It is a really solid album. And interestingly, I think it's as solid as the other ones before it. And I know that's always tough.
Thanks.
To keep all that quality.
I feel it's my best work yet. So I think I'm on an upward trajectory.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's
it is good to feel that way, especially at my age, because, you know, it's hard to get out of the walker sometimes.
Well, you know, it's the 40s are tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough to be in your 40s.
It is.
Well, that's what I find.
If only.
Yes.
Anyway.
That's what I find.
So normally we have a songwriter come in and they play their songs, and then we get all the fun about pulling them apart and trying to figure out how they work. But I figure, well, that's not really that much fun for the guest. So we're going to try stuff where we have our favorite guests come in, and they bring in their favorite songs, and we pull them all apart. And so the guest has as much fun and learns stuff.
Right, and no ego at stake.
No.
Right.
No.
So they're not feeling like, oh, I didn't want to change that. It's actually really interesting because then all of us are sort of at arm's length from this piece of material.
Yeah.
And we can have our own sort of objective look at it.
Yeah. I think it's a bit different also because the songs have been kind of vetted because they're already, you know, been recorded and they're well known. So it's kind of a different way of looking at them a bit.
Well, I think we should tell our listening audience a bit about Blair Packham. Did you have a little bio there, or should we just cover off the important things?
Let Blair handle it, maybe.
Yeah. Blair, well, no. Well,
of course, he's the head of Song Studio.
Song Studio, which I attended this summer. It's
yes.
a one-week workshop that Rick Emmett and Blair Packham started 13 years ago. He's also an instructor at Humber...
Seneca College, actually.
At Seneca College.
Used to be at Humber, but...
I'm sorry, but... Seneca College. What do you teach there, Blair?
I teach songwriting, and I teach artist development, which really could be anything when you think about it, anything that would help, would contribute to the development of an artist. So I actually talk about, because a lot of the students haven't really considered what they're taking on in life by becoming musicians. They're part of the independent music production program, but they haven't really they don't know how they're going to get paid. They don't know how things work in that way. So we'll talk about the life of a freelancer and what organizations you need to belong to in order to get your royalties, in order to get paid and so forth.
That is so smart.
That's great.
There's so many schools that I've heard of where they teach you. Like I went for a coaching course. There was virtually nothing on running a private practice as a coach. And I got out there and I went, how do I get clients?
Right.
Like,
how do you get clients?
How do you get gigs?
How do you set up your business for tax purposes?
Yeah,
I mean, we talk about that in this
program.
That's
great.
So, yeah, I think it's pretty useful.
We had a guest here a while back. I think it was Alyssa Baker, who is attending school here at Ryerson. And she said her program, her music program, is sort of half performance and half the business side of things.
That's really good.
Which is kind of
cool. Smart.
Yeah.
What else are you famous for? You played with the Jitters.
I had a band in the 1980s called the Jitters, and we're still together, but not. We play about two or three times a year.
Right.
But we had some hit records, Canadian hit records, which means that you won't know them until I hum them to you, and then maybe you'll go, that sounds sort of familiar.
How many do you have to sell in Canada to go platinum, like in the day?
Well, it's been lowered now. Back in the day, it was 100,000.
That's a lot of albums.
It's a lot of albums.
Yeah.
We sold 40-some-odd thousand of each of our two albums, so we didn't quite even go gold, unfortunately. But these days, 40,000 would be very respectable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? And that's exactly what happened to me, because when I saw you perform for your album release just a few months ago, you were together with the Jitters, and you played Last of the Red Hot Fools, and I was like, oh, so that's who this guy is. Because I remember that song when I was a teenager.
Well, I wasn't kidding. I mean, that actually is how it tends to go. And people will say to me, not so much anymore, but I used to, even at the height of the Jitters' so-called fame, when we were being played on Much Music, we got a lot of play on Much Music, a lot of videos on Much. And even at the height of that, people would, either they would go, Jitters, but they wouldn't know my name, which is understandable. Or they go, you're the guy from that band, you know. So that's fame in
Narrows
Canada.
Yeah. That's Canadian famous.
Yeah.
It's still better than Pursuit of Happiness, so hey.
But what do you mean?
The Jitters were way better than, like, the more famous bands were, like, Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh.
They got big and everything, and you guys should have been.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, although I have to say I'm a big Pursuit of Happiness
really?
Fan.
I didn't dig them.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a big fan. Yeah. All those beautiful harmonies.
We're
not here to talk
about
that.
We're not talking about Pursuit of Happiness
tonight. They had two female singers back.
They had two female singers, and one, in the last incarnation of the band, one of them played guitar, and she's a great guitar player, Chris Abbott.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about these songs. So now you've chosen three songs. We normally do two. So we're going to try to get a three jammed in here.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, why did you choose these three songs?
Well, it's funny. They're not – I have a list going at any given time of approximately – well, I call it the 100 list. And it's on my desktop on my computer. At any given time – I have 100 songs that are my favorite songs. Now, not favorite records and not favorite performances, but favorite lyrics and melodies, you know. And the list is fluid and it changes. And I've had it on my desktop on my computer for, like, I don't know, 15 years now, and it changes all the time. So for me, it would be really difficult to narrow things down to my top three. So these aren't my top three.
No.
But these are songs that I really do like a lot. And two of them are arguably country songs, and I'm not actually a big fan of country music. But I feel that these songs are particularly great. And actually, one of them, the one we'll hear in the middle, is quite timely because it – you know, right now there's a dialogue and you know about the Civil War and racism and all kinds of implications from you know those topics and the song is quite timely even though I think it came out in 1975 something like that. I can't remember, actually. But anyway, I think the lyrics are quite timely for that. And likewise, the third song is quite timely in the sense that Nazis are suddenly on the news again. And there's the third song kind of goes in that direction in addressing the portents of totalitarianism.
Are these three songs then very recently made it onto that 100 list for those kind of reasons?
Or? No. These songs have been on for quite a while, actually.
Okay. So these are ones that are longstanding on the list.
How long has my tune been on? your list.
Your whole album actually takes up the first 12 spots. Yeah, even though your album only has 11 songs. But I put an extra one in there to buffer you from the rest.
I did want to point out, though, that if you go on to our website, even if you're listening to this on the podcast, there's going to be lyrics there and also links to tabs.
That's
for the songs, so that you can actually figure out how
right
to play
now,
them.
If they're listening
right
on the
now,
radio or
right now,
the streams.
If you're listening to this now, they exist there.
Okay. Yeah, or even if you're listening on podcasts, they're just
now,
there.
And also, people aren't aware of what tabs are. Tabs are basically ways of simply communicating the chords and how to play them without using musical notation.
It's tenor alto bass, right?
No, tabs are like this.
Tablature. Yeah.
It's tablature, right?
Yeah.
So it's the name of the chord on top of
on top of the word.
Well, but it also shows you how to play it on guitar.
Yeah.
Oh, it shows the finger.
It actually shows which fingers to use.
It's a diagram of your fretboard with some dots on it.
I remember my first guitar books had those in them.
This kind of like this. Yeah, this is a much more informal way. This is usually done by the community, done by various people.
Yeah.
So it's people sort of transcribing it by ear, what they hear on the record. Yeah. And some of them are better than others.
Yeah.
So,
sometimes they're not right.
You know, some of them are a bit, sometimes they get the idea, but they miss the sort of subtleties, and that's always a tough thing.
I noticed, actually, speaking of the community contributing, that on the first song that I want to play you guys, the lyrics, which I got from one of the lyric sites on the web, have been changed at the end, and evidently because some fan objected to the, and I'm just going to say it, the expression, son of a bitch. Which I'm sure is fine for me to say because it's an but whoever transcribed these lyrics changed the fourth last line of the song,
"Son of a Guns."
Yeah, to "Son
of
Son of a Guns are coming."
But the recording still says,
"Yeah." The recording still says, "Yeah, exactly." And it's very appropriate, and we'll talk about why it's appropriate, why it's important that it be there.
Okay, let's have a listen to it.
Yeah. This is Guy Clark, "Desperado's Waiting on a Train," waiting for a train, I should say.
I'd play the Red River Valley, and he'd sit in the kitchen and cry, and run his fingers through 70 years of living, and wonder, Lord, as ever will I drill gone dry with his friends. Me and this old man was like desperados waiting for a train. Like desperados waiting for a train. Well, he's a drifter and a driller of oil wells, and an old school man world. He taught me how to drive his car when he's too drunk to, and he'd wink and give me money for the girls, and our lives was like some old western movie, like desperados waiting for a train. Like desperados waiting for a train. And from the time that I could walk, he'd take me with him to a bar called the Green Frog Cafe. And there was old men with beer, guts and dominoes, lying about their lives while they play. And I was just a kid, the day all called him sidekick. Was like desperados waiting for a train. Like desperados waiting for a train. One day I looked up and he's pushing 80, and
has brown tobacco stains all down his chin. Well, to me, he's one of the heroes of this country. So why is he all dressed up like them old men? Drinking beer and playing moon in 42, just like a desperado waiting for a train. Like a desperado waiting for a train. And in the day before he died, I went to see him. I was grown, and he was almost gone. So we just closed our eyes and dreamed us up a kitchen and sang another verse to that old song. Come on, Jack, the son of a bitch is coming. And we're desperado. Waiting for a train, like desperado. Waiting for a train, like desperado. Waiting for a train, like desperado. Waiting for a train.
Wow. And that very was Desperado's cool. Waiting for a Train by Guy Clark on Song Talk Radio with Bruce Neal and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM Toronto.
Wow, that was really cool.
It's a heck of a song, isn't
I
it?
I like those.
Is that one of the country songs?
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah. Country-ish.
I like the quiet turnarounds after every refrain.
Yeah.
Like it just, it kind of boom, ga, jim, boom, down to almost gone.
Yeah.
And then back into the next verse. It was like these little pause. It's like so much modern music is trying to push through to the end of the song.
Yeah.
And this was just like, we're going to take our time here. Don't hurry us up.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like old-fashioned storytelling in that way.
It is old-fashioned storytelling. I think you're right. And I think it accomplishes something really great. A few things. One is there's a lot of information from the top of the song to the bottom. He covers his whole life, the singer's whole life, from mm-hmm. the time he was a baby, basically, a child, a toddler, until the time that the old man dies, which is, and he's in his 30s, I suppose, the narrator. Mm-hmm. And it's a real person, by the way.
It's not his dad, though.
It's not his dad. It was actually his grandmother's boyfriend.
Oh, really?
Oh, I thought it was his grandfather.
No. It was his grandmother's boyfriend. But just the opening to me, I play the Red River Valley, and he'd sit in the kitchen and cry. Now, when I was a kid, the Red River Valley was one of those songs in the Mel Bay guitar books. Mm-hmm. So the instructional books, and you'd learn how to play it, right? And I never knew it otherwise. I only knew it because I learned it from these books. Ah. So I'm picturing that he's a little kid sitting in the kitchen. Or in his room or whatever, and he's playing the Red River Valley. But the next line, and he'd sit out in the kitchen and cry. So he's talking about the old man there. Run his fingers through 70 years of living. He could have said, run his fingers through his hair, said his old gray hair or whatever, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. He runs his fingers through 70 years of living and wonders, Lord, has every well I've drilled gone dry? And you know, that regret right there in the first verse, the picture of the old man sitting in the kitchen and the little kid practicing guitar. And then it says right away, we were friends, me and this old man. Now, here's something cool. This is the B verse. We were friends, me and this old man. Now, a typical song construction would go do another line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It's a one-line pre-chorus.
Jumps in fast.
And then,
desperate.
Yeah. And Pat Pattison, the great songwriting teacher, points out that when you have an uneven number of lines, when you have three lines as opposed to four or one line as opposed to two, there's forward motion. There's propulsion forward. So, and we was friends, me and this old man. And it's sitting on the five of the chords, right? Mm. In this case, it's the key of D, so it's on an A. And the A has a huge tension and huge pull back to the one. And it pulls like desperados waiting for a train. And it pulls into that chorus. And he only does it twice, showing great understatement, I think.
Yeah, anyway, it is kind of weird. It almost felt like the chorus was almost interrupting the verse.
Yeah,
You know, it's like, I'm going to do another verse. Oh, wait, nope,
well,
not.
It's more like, almost like a refrain as opposed to a full chorus. But
yeah.
One thing I want to bring your attention to our listeners, is the only perfect rhyme is in the first verse, cry and dry. But look at these imperfect rhymes or near rhymes. World and girls, cafe played, chin and men, gone and song.
Yep.
And so this is for you folks at home. You don't have to do perfect rhymes to make a beautiful song. In fact, when you're doing storytelling, I would argue it's best to stay out of perfect rhymes because it'll sound more like a guy just telling you a story. More
it
natural.
Right? More authentic. Yeah. Authentic. Yeah, I agree.
I think there's a difference between doing, not doing perfect rhymes and not doing any rhymes at all. Mm. Because I think when you do have near rhymes, it does kind of mean, it does still
keeps
seem
it
like
moving.
It's crafted.
Yeah, it's crafted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's always
the gray zones in between, right?
I like songs that rhyme, but
didn't he have
not
no
always.
Daddy?
I'm sorry?
Didn't he have no daddy, the narrator? Like, why was he relying on this grandpa?
I actually don't know the biographical.
Grandma's boyfriend.
I don't know. I mean, it's possible he had a mom and a dad, but when he visited his grandmother, this is who he hung out with.
Okay.
You know, I'm not really sure. Yeah. But the song goes on to explain, well, the very fact that in that first line, or first verse rather, and he wonders, Lord, is every well I've ever drilled run dry, indicates his regret with his life, which...
Yeah.
Some people in this room may have reached middle age, and if that's the case, you may have had the middle age crisis that everybody talks about, that, by the way, I don't think is avoidable. But with it usually comes a lot of regret, where you're looking back on your life and you're wondering, what is it that I could have done differently? Anyway, so that's a heavy thing to put in a song, a lot of songs are about me, me, me. They're about, I feel this way and I feel that way and I wish you would love me and why don't you love me and so forth. But to have regret about your life, that's a relatively unusual and beautiful thing to put in a song.
Well, and it's an interesting point of view because, again, it's not saying, why didn't you love me or, I did this. It was talking about a third person.
A third person.
Which is really, which people don't often do.
Yeah.
And people don't do very much anymore.
No, it's true.
It is kind of a shame because one of my favorite songs, which is Midnight Train to Georgia, which was actually called Midnight Train to Houston.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was.
Beautiful song.
Yeah, Georgia is so much better than Houston.
Yeah.
But again, they're talking about, someone in the third person, which people don't do anymore.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really nice. Looking at the lyrics, I mean, this guy is truly a poet.
Yeah.
As opposed to a songwriter, because he does, running his fingers through 70 years of living. And, Lord, has every well I've drilled run dry. I mean, those are very poetic things. It's not documenting, but it's a way of communicating
expressing,
lot of information in very few words. And that's really what poetry
He's
is.
He's also a very visual writer. If you notice that things like the specific Green Frog Cafe and the beer guts, the dominoes, the brown tobacco stains on his chin, like it's almost filmic. It's like so descriptive. This
it's
is a great
vivid.
Tip
yeah.
for writers.
Yeah.
Paint the scene for us. Like if it's going to be somewhere and something's happening, like use the novelist's talent, which is all the senses being involved, right?
Yeah.
You can almost smell the beer in the bar.
If
right?
the song is about, it's sort of an ode to someone who was a hero to him, to the writer as a child, and it's honoring that person, but it's talking about that person's regrets and maybe missteps in life. You could write a song that's like, he had lots of regrets and many missteps in life, and it would be awful.
Yeah,
To paint this illustrates that without actually saying those words.
It's very, very specific, and that's actually something I wanted to talk about because I haven't heard these songs before you sent them to us, Blair. And the thing that struck me about, in fact, all three of them is the specificity within them, right? They're very, very specific. And I actually heard I've been listening to Revisionist History, the podcast by Malcolm
Beautiful.
Gladwell,
yeah.
and he's got an episode called The King of Tears. where he's talking about the songwriter, what's his name? Bobby Braddock.
Yes.
Right? Who's written songs for, got it here actually, Tammy Wynette. And a whole bunch of – he's had so many number one country singles, Jerry Lee Lewis, T.G. Shepard, Tracy Lawrence, all these people, right? And the one thing he was saying in this podcast about the difference between country music generally and rock music is that specificity,
yes.
how it's very much tied to a time, to a place,
right.
to a very specific place in Tennessee, in Texas, yep. in those sort of places.
And the question is then, I think, that comes from that, maybe Gladwell addresses this, though, is if I don't know this old man and I don't know the Red River Valley and I don't know the drilling of oil wells and the Green Frog Cafe, why should I give a damn about this?
Exactly.
But you do because of the way it's expressed.
Because the way it's expressed and there is enough in there that's universal.
Well, yeah.
You know, and the specific references, you kind of get the idea.
Well, and if I were to write about my cat getting sick, God forbid, and dying, mm-hmm. let's say Charlie is his name, you guys might initially think, well, I've never even met Charlie. Like, I don't care about Charlie. One of you might think, I don't even like cats, you know. But if I express the feeling properly in a way that communicates to you how it makes me feel, then it will move you. And that's the purpose of writing songs.
Exactly. I think that's really the trick. Yeah.
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 It's interesting because in some ways this is a very simple song in terms of it really is just a verse and kind of this refrain, this verse and a refrain mm-hmm. all the way through. And there's not a B part. And he also, you know, he didn't expand like Desperado's Waiting for a Train into a full chorus, which it really could be. I mean, it's a very visual thing.
And he never explains it either. Well, Desperados, Bandidos, Mexican Bandidos.
Okay, they're on the land, they're on the run.
Yeah, and they're having an adventure together. And he does say, lives were like some old Western movie. So that's as far as he goes to explain it. But what he means, I think, is this bond with the old man who, that he feels like we're in this together.
Yeah.
You know, and just moving on closer to the end of it, he talks about one day I looked up and he's pushing 80 and he realizes this man is mortal. He realizes that he's an old man just like the other old man, but he never thought of it that way before. And I think that moment as well is something that we all go through with our parents and our grandparents when you realize they're just people.
Yes.
You know, you think of them as, you know, mom and dad and they're almighty and omniscient and so forth. And of course, they're not. So then it goes quite quickly. The day before he died, I went to see him. I was grown and he was almost gone. So we just closed our eyes and dreamed us up a kitchen. And he's taking us back to the first verse right there. Mm. The kitchen wherein the little kid was singing playing the Red River Valley. And we sang another verse to that old song. And this, I swear to God, I'm going to start crying right now. This line always kills me because I've been at my dad's deathbed and I was at my mom's deathbed and I know what it's like to be with people who are dying, loved ones and you know, talking about old times and stuff, but knowing they're going, any minute. And the fact that the last line is given to the old man, come on, Jack, that son of a bitch is coming. He's talking about the train, maybe. Yeah.
And death. And
maybe
death,
he's talking about death, you know. But they're sharing that moment together. Mm-hmm. And I find it incredibly powerful.
It's an amazing piece of simple yet complex songwriting. But Bruce has got some interesting stuff to tell us as well.
For those of you just listening, joining us. What are they doing?
Probably both.
I think I've done this before, but now I forget. If you're just joining us, we have to remind you, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We're on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streamed on songtalk.ca. Tonight our guest is Blair Packham. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet those thoughts at Song Talk Radio, email feedback@songtalk.ca, and we'll share your thoughts in real time right here on the show. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page, songtalk.ca/resources. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have on September 19th, Non-Songwriter Careers in Music, featuring special guests. Then on September 26th, it's the O'Chays, a husband and wife folk soul blues duo, Kelly and Michael O'Chay. And then October 3rd, which of course is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. Well, not yet. Yeah. My good friend, who I've known for many decades, is coming back to the show. Stephen Witkin will be here to talk about musical theater.
He's always a blast.
And please feel free to send me gifts. Buy
You like blue?
Interact e-transfer, is it called? We'll be giving you the email address later.
You like blue?
And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup on Sunday, September 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details. Back to you, Phil.
Thanks very much. So we do need to mention last week, if you were expecting a show in your podcast stream and we didn't show up, it was an unusual situation here. The studio was temporarily closed, so we couldn't get in and do a show. So that's why we were not in your podcast feed. And we did for people listening on the air, we repeated a show by Jules, who's a fantastic young songwriter, and the Command Sisters, of course,
on the Friday episode.
On Friday.
Oh, sorry about that. It was circumstances beyond our control.
Yes. We don't miss many shows. Actually, we only do about two or three. So we don't like to leave people on our podcast.
Let's hear another tune.
Well, before we do that there, Bruce.
Oh, you've got
a
letter.
Yes, we've got stuff to do, actually.
May I interject
quickly? Oh, yes.
Yes.
We just had a tweet in from Brian Nemet.
Hi, Brian.
And he wants to know, in regards to Blair, what can't he do?
He tends to
That's funny. Hi, Brian.
Is that your cousin?
I don't know, Brian. Well, you know what? We know each other on Twitter.
Oh, okay. What can't you? Yeah. Brain surgery? You can't do that.
No, I definitely can't do brain surgery. And the last time I tried doing it, it was a bad thing.
A lot of insurance problems.
A lot
of
mess.
That's for the courts to decide.
It was mostly the mess that troubled me, actually.
Okay.
So we always get lots of Roy's asking for iTunes reviews because that helps people find the show on iTunes. And we actually got a great one from Guitar Gordo. And I don't actually know how old this is, Guitar Gordo. So thanks for writing this. The headline is Fun-tastic. Mm-hmm. Fun, instructive, real. As a semi-pro songwriter who studied music theater and songwriting, this is the best. Best is in caps.
Yes.
Best songwriting podcast yet. I've had one-to-one mentoring sessions with real hit writers, and I've been to plenty of PRO seminars and have been a member of, and he is a coordinator of, the Nashville Songwriters Associations. And this is something different and real, shot in the arm, that boosts my sense of camaraderie. Thanks, G. Thanks, Guitar Gordo. That's really nice.
Guitar Gordo.
Very nice of you.
He's the man.
Yes. So please stop by iTunes and give us a review because we
we'd love to read them.
Doesn't have to be that over the top. Even just I liked it is fine.
Just something like Phil's amazing.
Phil's amazing.
Phil's amazing.
Well,
that's,
you are.
That's really
you are.
Good.
But right. Let's move on with the show.
Let's hear another song.
So the next one we're going to play is...
It's Good Old Boys Like Me by Don Williams, written by Bob McDill.
All right. And now, what was this about the song that you wanted to...
Well, this one, to me, speaks to the world we're in right now. We have a president in the United States, you may have heard of him, who...
won't mention his name.
No, who I think has contributed to a lot of divisiveness in the discourse and a lot of other terrible things, in my opinion. But one of the things is we're seeing a lot of examples of racism bubbling to the surface. The question is... You can maybe get rid of that president if you know he missteps in a big enough way and is impeached. But what happens to the people who follow him and the people who have felt empowered by his presidency? What happens then? And this song certainly doesn't address that at all. But it does ask the question. The title is, what do you do with good old boys like me? And I think it's timely because of that.
All right. Well, let's hear that song.
When I was a kid, Uncle Remus, he put me to bed with a picture of Stonewall Jackson above my head. Then Daddy came in to kiss his little man with gin on his breath and a Bible in his hand. He talked about honor and things I should know. Then he'd stagger a little as he went out the door. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. And those were
Sometimes, boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? Nothing makes a sound in the night like the wind does. But you ain't afraid if you're washed in the blood like I was. The smell of cave jasmine through the window screen. John R. and the wolf man kept me company by the light of the radio by my bed. With Thomas Wolfe whispering in my head, I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? When I was in school, I ran with a kid down the street. And I watched him burn himself up on bourbon and speed. I was smarter than most, and I could choose. Learn to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news. When I was 18, Lord, I hit the road. But it really doesn't matter how far I go. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live old trees. And those boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me? Yeah, what do you do with good old like me?
And that was Good Old Boys Like Me by Bob McDill on Song Talk Radio with Bruce Neal and Phil.
So Bob McDill was the songwriter, but that wasn't him singing it, correct?
Yeah, no. Very okay. Typical in Nashville, particularly at that time. Artists didn't write their own songs.
Okay.
That was, who sang it?
1980, and sung by Don Williams.
That's right.
Don Williams. Did Bob McDill sing at all, or...?
I don't know. Songwriters in Nashville, they tend to sing, and they're often really really great, actually, yeah. But they weren't the people who were having the hit records. Mm. So, yeah. Very, very typical, even still, just not as, I mean, with the rise of Taylor Swift in Nashville, there are more songwriters, more artists who are writing their own songs than ever before.
Okay.
But there's still a huge songwriting factory down there, and... Where there are professional songwriters who only perform on their own, but they don't have record deals.
Is that generally for the country music?
Yeah.
Or does it?
Yes,
okay,
very
yeah,
much
cause,
so.
Because in the rock world, like, people have been writing their own and singing their own songs for a long, long time.
Yeah, exactly.
Since the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it's funny because that used to be the way it was in country music, and it actually went as rock music turned into, since the Beatles, you're quite right, because Elvis didn't write any of his own songs.
Yes.
Little Richard, Chuck Berry, those guys did. But then the Beatles come along and they do their own songs, and we start to think if you're a singer, you write your own songs. And that was true in country with Hank Williams and Hank Snow and the other Hanks and other country artists and Johnny Cash,
although he didn't write everything as well, he
wrote less than you might think.
But as
time went on, country music became more about the professional songwriter and the professional artist separated the way it used to be in pop music, in like pre-Beatle pop music.
Right.
In the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that would be like... Carole King and Jerry Goffin and the song Factory, like the New York City, the Brill Building.
The Brill Building in 1650
Broadway. So they're
pushing
out all these hit songs for these little
Motown, which
bands.
Was which actually was a factory.
Sure.
Was
like the Bobby Braddock fellow.
But I think of the 60s as that time, and especially the, later in the 60s when Paul Simon, James Taylor, and all those folks, Joni Mitchell, were absolutely singer-songwriters. And that thing just took off, right? Now I think a lot of the young artists who are singers, I think they're doing co-writes. You get a lot co-writing with a pro. Yeah. And they're
with a committee.
Kind of, with a committee.
Sometimes it seems like it's a committee.
Yeah.
Yeah, average,
well, sometimes it is.
Six songwriters, I think, is the average.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll just jump in first. I just want to say, further to what I was saying before about this song, talking about, you know, a certain kind of Southern culture. Right. And he talks in the song about how he was smarter than most and I could choose. I learned to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news. He says that in the last verse. Mm-hmm. So he loses his accent. But what do you do with a guy who's born and bred in the Southern United States? And the opening line lays that out. When I was a kid, Uncle Remus would put me to bed. Now, do you guys know who that is, Uncle Remus?
No.
Uncle Remus.
Cartoon, isn't it?
No. Uncle Remus, it was a collection of African-American folk tales published for the first time in 1881. And they were Little Black Sambo, the Tar Baby, Br'er Rabbit. These are stories told in the... they were decried in recent decades as racist, mm-hmm. and I tend to agree. Mm-hmm. And so they've fallen very, very much out of favor. And this goes back maybe 40, 50 years.
But when it used to be like in public schools.
Yes,
stuff,
in public schools and in public libraries and places that.
Okay.
Not that they're banned, but they're just frowned upon now, these stories. They're collections of stories wherein the African-American characters in the stories tends to be made to look foolish.
Right.
And so they're really not politically correct at all. They're not necessarily very nice. But in the opening line of this song, when I was a kid, Uncle Remus would put me to bed. So what he's saying is those are the stories he read.
Right, yeah.
He was in that culture with a picture of Stonewall Jackson above my head.
We know who he is.
Yeah, the Confederate general.
Yes.
So he lives in a house where the losers of the Civil War, the Confederate general's portrait, hangs in the little boy's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so if you don't think this family is deep into Southern culture, mm-hmm. you know, then daddy came in to kiss his little man with gin on his breath and a Bible in his hand, and he'd talk about honor and things I should know, and he'd stagger a little as he went out the door. So what that's saying to me is he's trying to instill the values of the South, the honor that they talk about a lot, of the Southern gentleman and so forth, and religion. He's got the Bible in his hand, but at the same time there's the dichotomy, there's the fact that the dad's a little drunk and as he's trying to teach these things. So to me it's not presenting like Charlie Daniels' band, The South's Gonna Rise Again, or Lynyrd Skynyrd and Sweet Home Alabama, where they're saying, you know what, screw you, this is who we are. He's not saying that. Mm-hmm. He's actually saying, this is who I am, what are we going to do about it? And he's presenting it as a problem. He recognizes that in the modern world, this is maybe a problem. And I think this is a very rich song as a result of that kind of...
So you actually appreciate the nuance. You
know? Yeah. I mean, you can just sit and listen to the melody, and it's a nice melody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You can watch the images go by. But he's talking about his nostalgia. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. He can hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. And he makes a point right here, too. Just like in the opening line, he lays out Uncle Remus to sort of as a provocation almost in the second line of the chorus, and those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me, Hank and Tennessee. So Hank Williams, the father of modern country music, but what he's saying by mentioning Tennessee Williams is I'm no hick. I'm not a hayseed.
Yeah.
Tennessee Williams, the great Southern American playwright.
Yeah.
There are intellectuals, and he even goes farther in the next verse. He mentions Thomas Wolfe, and he mixes that up with John R., the great disc jockey, and Wolfman Jack.
Mm-hmm.
So he's listening, like he's got low culture and high culture in this song, and he's trying to make, I think, a point that this culture is very, very rich, but he recognizes that it's problematic.
Well, and I think he also recognizes and is communicating that forget your cliches. Like, don't buy the stereotype. Right? Saying, I led a life that was a mixture of all these things.
Yes.
It's a little bit of a window in on we who don't know the South very well, it's kind of like an education.
Yes.
About the complexities of life, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
his conflict, perhaps, between the good old boy and the education. I love that line about, I learned to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news. He covered up his Southern accent.
Yeah.
yeah.
And that's why they, by the way, that's why they hire Canadians in the U.S., because they have a neutral accent.
Yeah.
They love Canadian announcers down there. Because there's still that kind of cliche about if you talk like that, that you're not. I don't
you're not
say
very
it on
bright.
The radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
But
well,
that's the stereotype.
I know. That's
so
what I mean.
Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
So
well,
wrong.
You know, my students at Seneca College, I asked them as an assignment to write a country song because country has a lot to teach the songwriter, even if you hate it. It has a lot to teach the songwriter about brevity and economy of the story, also about structure. It's the most highly structured form of popular music, I'd say, lyrically, in that the rhyme schemes are consistent from verse to verse almost always. There's craft involved there, so it can really be instructive.
And how to do it without being repetitive.
Yes, yeah. and exactly. And yet being repetitive just enough.
Just enough.
Yeah. yeah. So the students dig their heels in and they don't want to do this and so forth. And often they turn in, you know, it might as well be Cletus from The Simpsons. You know, they sing they sing their songs like this.
Yeah.
And it's annoying. So I've learned to tell them, okay, and no cliches, no parodies of the genre, no trucks, no mamas in jail, no, you know, that, like, you can have some little Jack Daniels in there if you need to, but like let's not go overboard with the cliches. Mind you, this is all undercut by the fact that on the country radio today, you can hear songs that are fully cliches.
Yeah.
Like over and over, you know, about girls and Daisy Dukes and pickup trucks and all that stuff. So.
Right. But I guess that's the point is, like, if you want to learn how to write songs, is you need to actually push yourself into writing stuff you don't normally write.
Yeah.
So that you can learn the craft.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, in this song, there are a lot more really close rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, put me to bed, above my head.
That's a perfect rhyme.
You know, yeah, there's a lot. Whereas in the last song, there wasn't, but this still felt very conversational. And another interesting thing that we talked about is that there was no bridge, although there was like a four bar sort of turnaround,
mm-hmm.
which kind of did the thing of what a bridge would do, which kind of gave you a bit of,
I think it's
relief.
Like that
a little breath of fresh air. Yeah.
I think it's like, you know, when you have these fancy meals, apparently they give you a sorbet between every course to cleanse the palate.
Yes, I do that in my home.
That's what I really liked after the chorus or refrain is that there was that little pause, like we're going to come back with a whole bunch of lyrics, so we'll give you a bit of a break there just to relax, and now we're going to continue the story.
In this song, was that before the last verse or before the last chorus? It was before the last verse,
that was
wasn't it?
Before the last verse, so after the second chorus,
right.
which, you know, from one songwriter to a bunch of other songwriters, I tend to think is the best place generally. There are exceptions, obviously, for the bridge, because if you haven't established the pattern of what the song is yet, why are you putting in a bridge earlier than that?
Well, especially when you consider what a bridge
is supposed to do.
Well, it's supposed to do, but it has the potential to do is bridge from one section of the song to another section of the song. So if you're just repeating the chorus after the bridge, you're not really bridging to anything. You're bridging to what you did before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
true. If you look at it that way.
But also if you have it, or like I have a song where after the first verse and chorus, I go to the bridge, and I've always regretted it, even though that's the way I recorded it and that's the way it turned out and it's the way I'm used to it, and nobody has written me a complaint letter yet. But that's only because people don't care, I think.
Most people aren't going to notice.
No. Yeah, but the fact that I did the bridge after the first chorus, you know, if somebody's just listening to that, I wouldn't blame them if they thought to themselves, What's he doing now? You know, because you want to establish the pattern, right?
Yeah,
the brain is actually looking for a pattern when it listens to music. And so if you have a verse and a chorus and a verse and a chorus, there's your pattern. But usually by then your brain is going, okay, now give me something else, you know, and that's why the bridge goes there.
Well, but it's also interesting as a songwriter to challenge the patterns, right? Because I've been listening to some songs from the 40s and that, and, they sometimes, either they'll have a long extended introductory verse with very little melody, you know, kind of like da 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 dee da 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 da, and then it'll go to refrain. But some songs, they just dive into the refrain. Like the most memorable part of the song is right at the top of the song, which doesn't leave a verse to set up the chorus. You're just into the chorus. That works too.
That works too.
Right?
Absolutely.
I think it's important for you kids at home listening to try and experiment. I would say learn the form and then screw around,
play
with,
around
it.
With it.
Learn the forms.
The thing I tell my students is, because many of them dig in their heels when it comes to rewriting. They don't want to rewrite. And they don't want to rewrite because they feel, justifiably in many cases, really proud of what they've produced, right? And you know, as a teacher, the last thing I'm going to do is make them not proud of it, you know. But I do want them to try something. And my argument always is this, that you can write your version and have it on this piece of paper, and then you can write a new version on this other piece of paper, and if you end up not liking the new version, you can just
throw the
second piece of paper away and go back to the first, and nothing's been ruined.
No. Why do you, you know, think,
you just no,
that's an interesting question psychologically, though. Why are they resisting the rewrite?
Well, because it's hard work. Because they don't, there's a romantic notion about about the
it was birthed.
Yes, the thing that
from God,
exactly.
Yeah.
And
you can't be thinking about it too much.
But you just
abuse
them. I
personally
that,
think
right?
that God would be happier with you if you actually worked at the thing a little bit, and actually honored that feeling
honored
of creation.
Well, even in my experience, every time I have rewritten a song, and granted, I appreciate the fact that yes, you can always go back. I never go back.
Yeah,
I've always kept the revised version.
I think
it's
a lot
always
of it is. I think a lot
yeah,
of it is when,
almost
when,
always
song,
for me too.
When songwriters are really young, and they're just starting out. You think every song you've written is directly from God, and it's a masterpiece,
or it's crap. Like some songwriters suggest, they don't like their stuff.
But
at
after
all.
A while, but after a while, you realize that you're going to be writing more songs.
Right.
So, you know, you can actually look at your song and say, "Oh, maybe I'll try it this way, and if it doesn't work, it's not a big deal."
Oh, they're precious because they're in short supply. There'll only be so many brilliant things I do in
my
life.
You'll write hundreds of songs.
Well,
don't worry
hopefully
about
you will.
It,
you know? Yeah, well, yeah, certainly if you're serious at all about it. Yeah.
And certainly if you're just listening on the radio, you don't know how many revisions the song you're hearing went through.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah. I think lay people, civilians as I call them, they often think, and I don't want to disabuse them of this thought. I mean, they can think whatever they want, but I do think a lot of people see somebody singing and they sort of feel like that music is just flowing out of them. For the very first time, it wasn't written by some guy down the street, or six people down the street. You know, they're not thinking of it that way. They just want to experience it as a moment coming out of the singer's mouth, and they don't want to think about it, and they don't want to know how sausages are made.
Yeah,
you
know? That's okay. So especially like in the studio, sometimes
it's a great title for a song.
Sometimes when an artist is working with a producer, the producer can radically change the song. So what you're hearing may not have been the original thing. Like the original Tears for Fears, you know, the first album, you know, with Shout and all that stuff, that was written as an acoustic guitar song.
Right.
Okay. But it was the producer
turned into
that
a huge
production.
Turned into a hit.
Huge production.
Yeah. Well, you know,
and that made the song.
I always remember a quote by from Neil Simon, the famous Broadway comedy writer and film writer as well later in life. He said, "A play is not written, it's rewritten."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't think that it's written. The first draft is never the play, the song, the movie, you know, and that's the thing that separates the amateur from the semi-professional or professional is the willingness to pursue the discomfort of the rewrite and even the discomfort of letting somebody else see it and give you honest feedback.
Of course, the flip side to this whole argument is, in addition to this whole argument, is get through the first draft. As quickly
as something down,
You know, get something down because I know I used to do this where I'd get as far as like the first verse and then get stuck, and then the song would go nowhere and it end up in a dustbin, right? I've gotten better at just drilling through the whole thing and then going back and doing pass after pass.
I used to be a professional writer for business, so I would call it
applies
the bad
the same for writing too,
the bad first draft. Yeah. Like, I've got to get something on paper to edit. I've got to get through this scene or this song or
right.
whatever.
You've got to get something to give to the client at 2.
Well, you can't
do that too.
You can't edit.
Phil's in marketing too. Yeah.
That's right. You can't edit a blank piece of paper. So.
Right. Correct. And when you're working professionally, you're on deadlines. So I say the first draft is due Friday. Get the bad first draft down Monday, and then it'll improve all week. Right?
And it really works.
Take off the editor.
I gotta tell you, that really works. You don't think it will, but if you have something that you're working on, just make it. Just put anything down and fix it, and it really does work.
Sure, and if you're waiting for inspiration, which I think too many songwriters do, nothing wrong with inspiration, believe me. But if you're waiting for it, you may be waiting a long time. And I think, and I can't remember what famous songwriter said this, but inspiration likes to find you working.
Yes.
Right? Likes to find you at work.
Well, and that's the thing. We had, one of our guests Alan, who was doing a song a day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Just because, you know, to get your brain used to writing a song a day.
There was another quote, I forget who said it, but he said, I only write songs when I'm inspired, but fortunately I'm inspired at 9 a.m. every morning.
Right. Really and works. Irving Berlin, the great American songbook songwriter, he said, he was asked, when does inspiration strike? And he said, when I get the phone call.
Yeah.
he would be commissioned to write something.
Yeah.
Right, you know?
But we have a bit of something exciting. Blair is going to give away his unpopular pop CD.
Oh.
We're very exciting. So how are you going to do that? The first person who emails in to feedback@songtalk.ca, that is feedback@songtalk.ca, with the subject line unpopular pop.
And you have to correctly guess Blair's age.
No.
No.
You know, it's funny. It's funny. I've decided earlier today, and I failed utterly, but I'm not going to talk about my age anymore. Because people get an impression of you, you know?
Yeah.
and it's wrong. Because I'm eternally youthful.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think...
I'm internally youthful.
Well, my older brother says he's perpetually immature, and that seems to help.
Okay.
Can you believe it? Like, we're almost out of time.
Are
Can
we?
Can you believe it? Yes.
How did that happen?
It. Can't believe it.
I can't believe
we're
it.
We're going to say goodnight now?
I think we're going to have to because that is all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We love to thank our guest, Mr. Blair Packham. Thank
Great
you,
stuff.
Sir.
Lots of fun.
What an amazing
Lots
show.
Of fun.
I want you to come back and do this again.
Yes,
because
please.
I think this was a lot of fun. We got to do more of Send your
Rock and roll next time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Send your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, feedback and at Facebook and on YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Also, subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. It'll come out someday. Promise. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. If you are in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup on that's not the right what is it?
Well, it's Sunday, September 24th. It's at the Transat Club. It's from 1 to 4, and it's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend.
Yes, thanks for stop by Song Talk. .ca/meetup for all the juicy details. We'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto for putting up with all our shenanigans and horseplay. We'd like to thank Vanessa Vreeland for managing the social media channels. And of course, most
ending now.
We'd like to thank you, the home listener. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
NeilMody_.com.
You can follow Bruce at
Bruce Harrett.
And you can follow the lovely and talented Vanessa at
Sunny_Vanessa.
And
of course, Mr. Blair Packham.
BlairPackham.com.
Blair Packham, and at YouTube as well.
That's right.
Please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest on our show. That's it for us tonight. We'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.
Keep on writing.
Good night.
Bye.